Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I'm Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I'm an SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us for our podcast every Thursday starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone to dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talks website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for Quality 17702 or Starfleet Universe On Call or SFU On Call, and you'll find us there. But of course, if you want the best online experience, then you will go to twitch.tv. Yes, twitch.tv/SFU On Call. You'll be able to join our chat room there and chat it up with all the wonderful people there and get to watch and hear my beautiful voice and hear my wonderful, see my wonderful face, something along those lines. Something like that. And you can contact me for any reason. My email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you can follow me on Twitter or X, whatever they call it these days. You can also, that'd be sfuoncall. Also, a personal, my personal account is Paul Franz, PAULFRANZ. And of course, my business account, which is Franz Games, FRANZGAMES. And there's no T in that. And of course, this lovely podcast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. This quick note, which is that when it comes to AV news, there's not much. But more importantly, everything's been shipped out. The COVID shutdown is completed. Everyone's recovered and the orders are out the door. Now, just... And when it comes to the found on the online store this week is the F&E Federation Operations 2022. That's, you know, this is for the actual hard copy, not the ebook. The ebook, you can go someplace else, feel free. But this is for the hard copy of the rules, which is always a nice thing to have, which is only $39.95. The description goes, at any raid inbound, form battle group immediately. Newly updated 2022 advanced operations, yep, an expansion for the Federation and Empire. It is all about advanced strategy, new capabilities, expanding your campaign with these new ships, rules, and systems. So just remember that. Also, I'm not sure if this is still a thing, but it was. And last time I reported this, they said there was no, ADB said there was no, date when this was going to expire, which is, of course, there's a 15% discount on new or enhanced fine detail plastic materials. That's the clear, ultra, and gray. And to take advantage of the 15% off offer, you need to use the code F as in Frank, D as in Dave, P as in Paul, 15 at checkout for purchases of $5 or more. So just to remind that on that is on Shapeways. Moving on forward, when it comes to the online tournament, as I said last week, Sapphire Star tournament is completed. They're going to be doing a Sapphire Crown tournament of the winners for the last four Sapphire Star tournaments, and I actually have to set that up. Unfortunately, Steve Petrick asked me to set it up yesterday, and yesterday I was down in Baltimore watching the Orioles, so couldn't do anything yesterday night. So got off of work, ran out there, and so I didn't get my email really until today. And when it comes to the lab report, there's nothing happening there. Same SFB, same FedCom library. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one of Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, who do we have? We have Jeff. Hey, how you doing, Jeff?
Good evening, everyone.
And we have Doug. Hey, Dougie.
Hey, howdy, howdy, howdy. How's everybody doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I don't care about that. Oop, wrong one. Sorry, Barry, just give me a sec. I did something stupid. There. And finally, Barry, how you doing, Barry? Long time no see.
I'm doing wonderful. Yeah, it is. It's been long overdue.
Okay, cool. I'm all set for Twitch. Hi, guys.
Well, I've missed a lot.
Yep, what was that? I'm sorry.
I'm saying I probably missed a lot. I've been gone so long.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's been what? Somewhere between 4 and 6 months?
It's been a while. It's been a long, too while.
So long that India has already gotten some, you know, spacecraft on the moon.
On the south pole of the moon. Chandrayaan 3. Mm-hmm. First country to land on the south pole of the moon.
Yep.
That is awesome. Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. And the fourth country to actually land something without crashing it.
Yeah, especially since the Russians just proved how hard that is to do, like the day before.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, having said that, the Russians dragged a dinosaur out of one of their museums and tried to launch it to get there ahead of the Indians, and well, didn't work out quite as well as they wanted.
So the craft that was supposed to land wasn't exactly up to snuff?
It was, let's see, I was Luna 25. Luna 24 launched in the 1980s.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think it was like they built 24, they built 25, never launched 25. And then the Indy was going to send something, and it's like, oh crap, we can dig this one out, dust it off, and launch it. And they've been sitting for a while.
Hmm. There's a problem. Yeah. You can't really get away with a Hail Mary play if you don't really, you know, profess the other end of that equation. But that's basically what the Russians tend to do with their space program when it comes to things like this. We have anything in the wings we can throw? We do? Oh, good. Let's do it. What do you mean it failed? Someone on the BBS made the wisecrack that the parachute failed to deploy.
Well, even successfully, if you had a parachute and it successfully deployed, it probably wouldn't do squat.
Well, considering how the moon has a very noted lack of an atmosphere.
Exactly the point.
Yeah.
Good. Lord knows.
That's a good one. The parachute failed to deploy. I'll have to remember that when Henry
posted. Yep.
Good.
Should be in.
Looking for Booster 9 and Starship 25 to launch next month.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're calling for September 9th or something like that. No earlier than September 9th. That will be an amazing sight.
Yeah, that's
it. It will happen. It's just. What's that?
I was going to say, isn't that 2 weeks from now? Yeah, 2 weeks.
Yeah. That is going to be the most. If it makes it to orbit, it will be the largest spacecraft to ever make it to orbit.
Wow.
By a lot.
Mm-hmm.
By a lot. I mean, I think it's about double of Saturn V, which is the current record holder.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting things in space coming up, so to speak. Doesn't
As long as it doesn't come down in some cases. So.
There is something to that.
But
yeah.
It's not, you know, not non-deliberately.
Oh, as long as it comes down in a controlled fashion and a controlled location.
Come down when you're supposed to.
Yeah.
And
where it's supposed to.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, come on. Oh, it hit the planet, right? Come on. What more can you ask for at this point?
Well, you know, the thing is that when you're going to litho break, it generally is a good idea to have your accuracy in good order.
Or hydro breaking works too. Most of the world.
Hydro breaking usually works a lot better, and you don't have to be quite so precise.
Yeah.
Cool.
Can't do hydro breaking on most.
So what's up, Paul? What's up with the SFU today?
Oh.
Oh, is that what we're here to do?
Yeah, actually, so we're gonna talk something other than an outer space. Like, you know.
I think there's this tournament coming up. I hear about the gamers.
Yeah. That's true.
I'll reiterate that for anybody that might be listening tonight.
Yep.
And what's your name again? Not Doug, Paul, and what was the other guy?
Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff the Trucker.
Are you going to be in that?
Yep.
Jeff the Trucker, are you going to be in that tournament?
Nope.
Sadly, no. I'm a little too far away geographically.
Oh.
He's more out west.
Where are you located?
I'm based out of Arkansas, but I've got a two-week cycle. I spend 1 weekend at home and the next weekend in Portland and then back again. Right now, I'm just a little east of Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Oh, okay. I'm about 10 miles away from Arkansas right now.
Oh, what are you doing out that way? It sounded like you weren't there all the time.
Nope.
No. My job is all travel. So I'm in a hotel, I live in Pennsylvania, not far from Harrisburg, which is where Doug lives, which is where the convention is. In fact, my car is parked at Harrisburg Airport. My company puts me on these projects. I'm about 250 hotel nights a year, and if you're a long haul trucker, you understand that lifestyle.
Yes. I understand the road warrior thing because I do it. I just bring the motel with me.
Except, right. Yeah, but it's kind of hard to bring a motel with you when you're on a plane.
This is true.
Yeah.
It does require a little more logistical perseverance.
Yeah. So, I do these projects, and right now the project is in Memphis, but my hotel.
Oh, okay.
But Memphis is, project's in Memphis. My hotel is actually in Mississippi, but Arkansas is about 10 miles away from where I'm at.
Oh yeah, I'm familiar with the area.
Yeah. And I'm actually in South Avon, Mississippi, as we speak.
One of our customers is in South Haven, and they're, the less I say about them, the better. I don't want to endanger any business arrangements with my opinions of truthful. Never mind.
Jeff, you're stupid. It's about to start digging yourself a hole. It's like,
yeah. Someone please take, call Scotty and have him beam the shovel up. I don't need it at the moment.
Yeah.
Oh.
True. Now, I had a couple ideas for topics for tonight. Now, obviously, these were more of interest to me than anybody else, just because these are ideas that I've liked to implement. And one of them, I think people will be more interested than the other. But also, since last night, I went to a nose game. I got back around a little bit half past midnight. Sorry, I went to bed around half past midnight. I got home around midnight. So I wanted something that was going to be interesting to me and actually so I'd be excited and therefore not fall asleep while I'm sitting here.
That's a good thing.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing. Number one. What's that, Burke? Barry?
I said that's always a positive. Yeah.
Oh, definitely always a positive. Okay.
Not falling asleep.
Yep. This was basically, it's an online game. Now, there's a couple possibilities in where to put it. Possibly even all of them, which is like FedCom or SFB, or have a separate one, which is based off of the Sublight game rules. And I call it Hidey Hole.
Okay.
The idea being is basically that you have two boards. That makes it easier, because another way of thinking about it is two sides of one board. You know, and the reason why I think about something for like this for online was because I figured it's a heck of a lot more easy to implement when the computer is the moderator, i.e., that.
Sure.
The idea of the game is that you have I call them hidey holes. Basically, they are portals between the two board game boards. And the idea is that you can pop out of one of those onto the other game board, where your opponent in theory would be. And obviously it's, you know, you can play the game, you know, like you normally would, but you also can then dump in, you know, run away from your opponent by going to the hiding hole and to go to the other board. Now I haven't thought about, well, I'm thinking at the moment is that seeking weapons basically lose their tracking when you go between the two boards. Because it no longer exists.
This almost sounds like taking the idea of, it almost sounds like what you're doing is that you're phasing between two maps in similar fashion to the way cloaking devices break lock-ons and sensor lock on the one map in Starfleet Battles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but in this case, the hexes are fixed. So now, the one thing that I'm also contemplating when it comes to this is, okay, obviously you can't see anything that's on the other board. Now, the only thing I'm thinking about is maybe have limited visibility for around the hidey hole, meaning that if you are like one hex away from the hidey hole, you can see within like one or two hexes, I think possibly two hexes, from the hidey hole. So if, let's say, your opponent...
Oh, you could...
Yeah.
You can think around the corner a little bit.
Right, yeah, exactly.
I was thinking something along the lines of back in the old, old, old annals of computer gaming, the way Hunt the Wumpus used to work. A ship is X number of hexes away. Yes, yes, I do.
Explain, because I don't remember the game.
Hunt the Wumpus was a mostly text-based game in its original form. Mm-hmm. You would go into a grid-like structure, and as you would go through it, you would get clues. The Wumpus is X number of... you can hear the... it's getting closer, it's getting closer, and when you think you're one move away from the Wumpus, you fire your arrow towards where you hope the Wumpus is. If you're right, you win. If you're wrong, nothing happens. And if you move into that store, if you move into the spot where the Wumpus really is, the Wumpus jumps on you and eats you. Kind of like the Gru in the original in the original Zork. Why you didn't go in the forest?
There was an old book called 101 Computer Games, and each page of the book had a computer game written in BASIC, and you could type it into your
computer.
And then play it.
Yep.
And Hunt the Wumpus was one of those games.
And it was ported over to just about every different flavor of BASIC around, because it was actually used as an instructional tool to help teach things like arrays and variable usage and a few other odds and ends, which changed based on which version of BASIC you were implementing.
Right.
Yeah.
So basically, if I get this right, what you're looking at with the hidey hole is kind of like a, not quite like a wormhole in Eve, because you don't have that blind room step through that you have in that game, like where you have to click on the wormhole and then you go through it to the other side, where you'd have your map basically being two different systems, but it's more like a dimensional vortex maybe kind of thing.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like the idea of having it where you can like see around the hidey hole a little bit, because then you're not just stepping blind through it.
Right, right. So basically, you're not going to basically go through it, all of a sudden you're one hex away from your opponent. You know.
Surprise.
Surprise.
Right. Yeah. Now, when you're close to the hidey hole, you can see through it partially. But can you, so if somebody's backed off three or four hexes from the hidey hole, they can wait, and when you go through, bam.
Yeah, that's the other side of it. You can set a devil of an ambush.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's a guessing game, because the question is, also, since there's going to be, at the very least, two holes, which one do you go after? Which one do you go through? And which one, if you're waiting an ambush, which one do you wait on, upon?
Yeah. It becomes a question of patience at that point. Patience and nerve. Okay, I'm going to wait for him at this hole. If I've got it right, he's going to pop out and I'll have it. If I've got it wrong, he's going to pop out of the other one and he's going to have a good shot at my tail feathers. That's not good.
Right, and here's the question.
What is that,
And of course, then there's the whole question of direction. They say that you're facing the hole. You're moving zero because you basically, to wait in ambush, you might have to wait zero, or you have to go around and around the circle. Because go around and around the circle to keep up, to have it, so you actually have a speed, then you can't be facing the hole until he comes through, in which case then you have to head directly at him. Because and the possibility is that when he comes through the hole, that he sees you. And he's facing you, and he shoots you before you can shoot him.
Well, here's the thing. If you're orbiting, you don't necessarily have to hit unless you're really, really close to the hidey hole. I mean,
right.
If you're going speed 14, 14, 15, you can speed up. Then you could stay far enough away that you could turn in, make your attack, and then turn back out, depending on your weapon setup. I mean, depending
can
on
the
range.
Can you fire through the hole, or
no?
I guess you can't.
You can fire across the hole, but not. You can fire across the hole, but not through the hole.
Right.
This almost sounds like a setup where you want to. I was going to say, this almost sounds like a setup where what you're going to want to end up doing is on your turn, you can move or turn or jump into the hole or out or fire. And you have to pick which of the four options you take on your turn, because you can't do more than one on your turn.
Well, here's an important question. How big is the hole?
How big the hole?
How big is the hole?
One hex.
Yeah, is the hole like one hex?
Yeah.
Or is it multiple hexes?
The idea is that it would be one hex, but there's multiple holes.
So basically, it's two maps with a number of junctions between them.
Correct.
Yeah. Now, the other thing is that if you're hanging out orbiting the hole two hexes away, you can see when somebody else comes to within two hexes of that hole.
Right.
And at that point, you can say, oh, now can you fire through the hole?
No.
From four hexes? Yeah,
no.
You cannot fire through the hole.
No, you can't fire through the hole.
So, right. So, let's say you're orbiting at range two from the hole, and he gets into range two. And you can say, oh my God, the angle is really bad. Do I have time to turn in and head straight towards him, or maybe turn around and run away? Or you
well, might definitely you could turn. They definitely could turn and run away. I think that at range two, you could do that. Turn. Yeah. In.
The other tactic is that you could turn into the hole, and if you're going faster than him, if he jumps through the hole, you can jump through the hole the same impulse. You swap sides. without providing a firing opportunity.
You know, this is starting to sound more and more like a wet Navy submarine simulation type game, where you're playing games on the layers.
But were you looking at doing this on the client, or were you looking at doing this as a double blind?
Well,
because this could be an interesting double blind thing at a convention.
Oh yeah, you could.
But you have to have a referee.
Right. That's why I was saying that I was planning on doing it online, because it's in theory you could do it with a double blind, as long as you have a moderator, which obviously that'd be quite cool.
The computer makes the best moderator of all.
Right. Exactly. That's. What? That's why I was thinking online is probably it would be the best experience, because then two players can play without a moderator. It's like playing playing by email. The problem is when you play by email, which people rarely do these days, you need a moderator to play. That's one thing. I still like the idea of, which is asynchronous SFB or FedCom play, i.e. play by email, if we could have it as an automated system to play by the play by email idea, which is, of course, that you do, there's a couple of possibilities. One's obviously you can plot what you're going to move, and then you have breakpoints. And the another one for that is to you say, okay, I want to have, it's like seeking on my opponent. I want to always aiming for the front shield or the rear shield, that kind of thing, and obviously conditional movement and conditional orders, which is, again, the easy part is in my mind would be implementing the engine. The problem is defining the engine, defining the interface for people to actually to define their orders and things like that, which would be, I think, in my mind, a little more difficult when it comes to that. But that's one of the things that I always like, is the whole idea of asynchronous play.
Does sound a lot like old school plotted movement.
To a certain degree. Jeff, have you ever played by email?
Oh, you would pretty much need it to do the. You would need it to do the whole thing about jumping through, and who can jump through when, and who makes the decision whether they're going to jump through, because that can't really be a you go, I go kind of situation. It has to be a simultaneous choice.
And no, I haven't played anything by email in many, many years.
Understood.
Universe and gaming.
Oh yeah, understood. That you know that when it comes to online, as playing SFB online, that was the original way you did it.
That was the way you originally played SFB originally, altogether. Hard stop. Plotted movement used to be the only way to play the game.
Yeah.
Plotted,
Well, I remember that. Yeah. That was what I learned on was plotted movement way back in the day.
Same here. And in some ways, that was kind of nicer than free movement.
Oh yeah, and I've mentioned multiple times, which is I love the idea of plotted, at least partially plotted movement. You know, not plotting the movement for the whole freaking turn, but plotted movement for you know like. 8 impulses where there, because if you read the rules originally, the reason why you would do plotted movement and then you had the possibilities of like announcing ahead was supposed to be an emergency maneuver, a quick, you know, you prepare for it. Okay. Prepare for a quick move. And when like fire, when the captain announces, boom, you did it. Versus, okay, this is what the ships are moving so fast that you really can't adjust so quickly to such to the movements. You know, there's that lag that actually occurs when it comes to moving the ship. Navigating the ship to where you want it to go, and then also you have the other ship coming from the opposite direction. You know, if you really think about how, given how the period of time that each impulse is supposed to represent, there's no way that anybody could be that agile or that, have that good reflexes to actually to do that, especially, a captain, because the captain just tells the navigator what he wants him to do. That's the whole idea of plotted movement, is that you're telling the navigator, this is what I want you to do. Actually, the pilot. More than navigator. Usually navigator is for between stars. But,
Yeah, I understand that. And if in reality, if you were going to set up a ship that was that maneuverable, you'd probably want to have the captain with the joystick controlling the ship directly and not having to give verbal commands to a pilot only works if the ship has a turn time of say 2 to 3 minutes for a 360 degree turn. If you can turn the ship in 2 to 3 seconds, then that belay loop becomes untenable, because somebody with a joystick, if the captain has a joystick and he can control it directly, he can outmaneuver anybody who's going through a helmsman having to give commands.
Right. Oh, understood. But at the same time,
it really just comes down to a playability issue, though.
I agree that, the problem is that unplotted movement, free movement, when they introduced that, people went, oh wow, great, I can do, I can decide this every single time, I don't have to do all this thinking beforehand, and that's what people preferred, and that's why that became that became the normal way of doing things,
right.
Well, there was the old Space Gamer cartoon that basically called Starfleet Battles Stopwatch Battles, because each turn was supposed to be like a second or something like that.
Right, exactly. That's the idea.
Yeah.
Right. because again, that's how, what each impulse is supposed to represent, you know. And the thing is, the captain has more on his mind than just maneuvering. He has to think about what his opponent will do afterwards. That's why you have, that's why the whole idea, you have a helmsman that, you know, takes control of the ship and flies the ship, and the captain can just tell the helmsman, this is what I want you to do, and he'll do it.
Oh yeah. Well, here's the thing about that, and it's kind of a pet peeve of mine, you might say, because it's something I'm struggling with a little bit in design of the one thing I told you I'm working on before. And it comes down to abstraction versus every little itty bitty bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the engineer versus the, you know, the play. Like wanting to drive the car, but also wanting to say, okay, this is the turn radius of, you know, I turn the steering wheel and it makes this other part work and it makes this other part work. And this other, you know, it's like, what depth of detail do you want to go into? And it's like the free movement play lets you, when you're playing the Starfleet Battles game, it makes it more like, say, you're in an episode of this original series. And, you know, where you're watching them do their fight. And, you know, if you think about that classic episode about the Fed versus the Rom the first time around, you get that kind of feel out of it. But if you go to the pure, every one of these is 1 second and you get like one action a turn kind of thing with the plotted movement thing going, then not so much. So it's like abstraction and feel and getting your experience out of the game versus, as an engineer, I want to make every single bit of this, every impulse of it, every decision
basically
all get wrapped up into this absolute thing that we can nitpick forever down and make a monster of a game out of a monster game. So
right, basically the whole idea of micromanaging every little action that occurs on the ship or a ship.
Right.
Because of, you know, that becomes one of those issues, especially with a strategic play. You know, when you have multiple units and, or units in whatever form, whether that represents a ship or represents a person, when it comes to those games, when you give them orders, do you want, some people want to do the micromanaging. Okay, I want you to move exactly there. I want you to move exactly there. I want you to move exactly there. Versus, okay, you all move over to here. You just make a nice curve. Figure out how to do it by yourself, i.e., abstracting out that, so you're not micromanaging every order, every little movement, every little action that unit takes.
Right.
Because that's
something else you run into, the more logistics the individual player has to deal with on a per turn basis, the progressively longer it takes each turn to finish.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets to a point where the complexity collapses under its own weight and nobody plays anymore.
Right. Which is, if you can't really think about it, well, not really think about it, that was one of the goals of Federation Commander, was to cut back on the number of decisions that were needed to be made. Or could be made. Let's put it that way. Could be made. And therefore speed up play and, in my mind, also simplify play to a certain degree. I think simplifying the rules simplifies play. I think that's more, a better way of thinking about it, because I don't think cutting back on the number of actions, or you know, basically number of actions per turn, actually simplified the game. It sped up actions, but again, I've hit on the whole issue of squadron versus fleet, and the whole initial idea of having fleet ships, with that you could actually use more ships to fly, fly a larger fleet, and be able to speed up the play for that scenario. When the big issue there, of course, was that it decreased not just the defense, but also the offense, and therefore all you did was shrink the ship. You kept the speed the same because of it took relatively the same number of ships. You want to speed up play, keep the same number of weapons and decrease the number of defense. They'll speed up play real quick. Ships will die a heck of a lot faster.
Hey guys, I need to call it a night because I have like an early morning wake up.
Okay. Well, Barry, it was nice to have you around for a change.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, see you, gamers. Have a good one.
Oh.
See you in about 9-10 days there.
Yep. be good to see Barry's face.
Actually, about 9 days.
Yep, 9 days. Oh, by the way, I'm going to be there a little later. I'm going to be probably coming up around noon. Because something came up and I have to show up instead of like 10 o'clock in the morning, more like noon. But I will be there. I will be there on Saturday.
Okay.
Okay. Moving forward. Yes.
Do you think you might be able to drop off stuff so we can have a start?
Oh,
like
sure.
If Barry like wants to help, or if I can do it, you know, I mean, I'll be really busy with registration initially at 10 o'clock in the morning there, with the initial rush coming in. But maybe we need to get together the weekend before, drop off stuff, and
which is this weekend,
we can set up the tournament, and people can start their matches at finish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it would be
like it's a double elimination tournament.
Yeah, I know.
And they only got 2 days of play.
Yar.
Plus, there will be people there that, like, if the doors are locked, they'll unlock the doors and get in and be sitting there waiting for us. Not that he just left or anything.
Right.
So
would be, if I stopped by on Sunday, would that be fine?
Sure. Sunday afternoon. Mm-hmm. That would be great.
Yep. That should give me enough time.
You want to give me a holler, maybe?
Yeah.
And give me a call before you leave.
Oh, yeah.
In case they think of anything you might need to bring besides just SSDs. So,
understood.
I did have a question for you about the Wi-Fi stuff.
Yeah.
Because they have an open Wi-Fi at the facility.
Right.
I was just wondering if maybe you had like a spare old router sitting around that we might be able to use. We could talk about that later.
Sure.
I think something for like secure connection kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
The big thing
she
there.
She's paranoid when the lady said it's totally. She said not only did she say that they have Wi-Fi, they had several Wi-Fis, and the one is complimentary and it's completely open.
As in, there's
no password needed.
Oh, that's not overall a good thing. Just for security sake, it's not.
I told her the Russians probably thanked her for it.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, that's just a facility.
Yeah, we would have to. There's only two ways of doing that, of having so we can set up a separate router for us, which is one, connect up hardwired to one of their routers, or we have to use a computing device, you know, one of our own computers, act as a bridge, and then connect that up to the Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
The Wi-Fi router.
Okay. So. Okay. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think outside of the scope of your podcast.
Understood. Understood.
Which is about other stuff that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The other topic is something that I'm gonna start here, but I'm gonna see if I can get a discussion going on my Facebook group, my Starfleet Warlords Facebook group, because of I would like to have the community at the very least give me feedback on that what I call it is Mini Warlord, which is it's not the official name, but it's the best way to describe it at the moment. Now, as I said, this one that you guys might not be as interested, but I am, just because of it's a at the head the idea has been bouncing around my brain ever since Dirk, who's helped me with Starfleet Warlord and creating an online client, which he needs. At some point, I think we need to talk, because he's been stuck with doing work which actually pays, finding interns is that he can pay nothing to, has this the whole idea is to give them experience. Doing this kind of stuff so basic college students, it's harder and harder to do. But anyhow, that's
people like to eat.
Yeah, people like to eat. For some strange reason, I don't know why. Why do you need food? That's kind of,
it is. Well, it does keep me in business. It does keep me in employment.
Yeah, it definitely keeps you alive. Little things like this, I don't know why, Why do you need food to live? I don't know. You can't just live off of universe juice.
Well, theoretically, no.
I'm not sure you know where.
I've talked to my bank. Exposure is very hard to use in order to pay your mortgage. So there's that too.
That's true. It's nice to actually have a place you can actually live. That brings up a real quick thing I'll mention real fast. The side note, which is, I don't know what it is. I think it's just the housing market is just nuts, because the costs are so high these days. And of course, now the mortgages are so high these days. It's like 7%. Or mortgages and stuff.
Oh, do you want me to tell you about that? Oh my God. you're right up my alley on this one. You want to know why it's so insane right now? This is a culmination of generations of greed. And I'll tell you this, because I've worked in that industry before and you're quite aware of it. You personally from right. Talking about my.
Oh, background. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And basically, what you have in the real estate market is you've got decades of one lie on top of another, and the biggest lie in it is that the value of your property will always increase, and that's only true because relative to inflation. The other thing is which means people always want more when they sell it. The other thing is you have the taxes on it when you sell. And then on top of the taxes, you have all your closing costs, which is essentially another form of tax on it. And part of your closing cost is either some lawyer's fees or your real estate broker fees or both, which is like an additional tax on it. So the inflation factor on selling and reselling real property is worse than normal inflation. And this has been going on for literally generations, and you're seeing the culmination of it, that you have these periodic bubbles that burst and the prices go down and they stabilize and then they go back up again. Well, the other thing that really is killing it is not just the gentrification of people fleeing the cities during the COVID scandemic, but the which artificially drove up a lot of prices. Like in the area where I live, you know, we've seen prices nearly double. And it's just fucking ridiculous. Oh, sorry. It's just totally ridiculous.
Yeah, thank you.
How much that is. But the other thing that's killing it is the greed of flippers. You know, you go out and you buy repos, you buy distressed properties, they buy, you know, abandoned properties from the city or whatever, and then they turn around and they sell them for multiples of what they bought them, or at the quote market price, which instead of actually selling them at something close to what they bought them for, which would drive the market price or the average down,
right?
You know, it creates an artificial inflation on top of everything else, and it's like this market has been overdue for a crash for a very long time.
Well,
I think it's just been kind of artificially fluffed up at the moment.
To a certain degree, especially because of COVID, things just went nuts during the pandemic. Currently my house is worth twice than what I bought it at. Which was only 4 years ago, which is totally nuts. It's not supposed
just
to go.
Just remember, something's only worth something if somebody's willing to pay you for it.
Oh, agreed. And of course, the whole issue is that if I sell it, then I have to buy another house at the same, at a higher cost. It's like, why would I ever do that? But that wasn't the point I was going to make, which was I was going to mention real quick that normally houses around my house, they go like that. These days, I've got these two houses which have been on the month for over a month. This one actually has been over 2 months on the market, and no one's bought it yet, which is, in my mind, shocking. Actually, a house 2 hours down the road, they put theirs up, and within 3 weeks, gone. Now, I'm willing to bet that they weren't asking basically the what's called considered market price, you know, at the moment in time. That's the only reason they were able to buy it sell it so quickly. So,
well, you never know. The issue with selling houses is basically this: there's different seasons to it. Like a lot of people will look to move in a specific time frame when they have kids that they're putting into school districts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that is probably the number one driving factor on when people are buying houses.
Oh yeah.
The other is need, and you don't necessarily like. There was a point in that whole scandemic era where house goes on the market, boom, it's sold 3 days later. You know, where they get the instant sale, and that becomes the new norm for a while. And people go, oh, my God, it's been up for 3 months. What kind of a dog of a property is that? Well, the thing is, before the lockdowns, it's not that untypical for houses to be on the market for 6 months to a year.
Well, Doug,
it's
that's
not exactly the fastest selling market.
Doug,
and
that's
and
your area.
Living at, part of that.
Realize, the last house, my previous house sold in 2 weeks 4 years ago.
Yeah, and it's... Yeah, and you were in a great neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly.
That people want to move into.
Exactly, which was
in a great neighborhood where I live, shit will sell like that in like 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the average overall everywhere else, it's not always that fast. It's not always a high turnover market.
Oh, I understand.
So, you know.
Yeah, the whole real estate market is really upended with COVID and all that kind of thing.
It's really an oddball kind of thing because it's a limited number of things that are changing hands. It's not like a commodities market, so to speak, you know, where you have something always coming in and going out, you know.
Okay. So. Well, okay. Get back to the actual topic after that little side note. This week in mortgages and real estate. Okay.
But Starfleet digressions on the call.
That's not, that's nothing there new for this podcast. Of being going down sideration, chasing rabbits. Okay. Back.
You asked the question, you got an answer.
I know. I probably should never brought it up. Because I could
get my blood pressure.
It could be this week in Doug's housing life. Back to it, which is the whole idea of a mini star warlord. Because currently, if you looked at the Starfleet Warlord and looked at the rules, it's a very nice system. It's all, you know, they've been running it for over 20, 25 years. It used to be played by mail. That tells you how old this game is. Now, and it's got, it's developed when it comes to the way it works. Real quick overview for those people who don't know Warlord at all, Starfleet Warlord. Starfleet Warlord is a campaign game where it's asynchronous. Love it, asynchronous. Asynchronous play. You put in your orders, and then I run them. Or basically the computer runs them. And then the orders are sent out, and then you send them back in. Then what happens is actually each person's turns, their set of orders, are run. For for each quote unquote turn, play a year, is what it's called in the actual game, and so you have your ships that you purchase, and you can purchase them at what are called warp gates. The idea being is that either you purchase them in your home office, which is in your home sector, which is a 16 by 16 tactical map. It's more a strategic map. Yeah, it's a strategic map. And you have a possibility of up to a 10 by 10 grid of these sectors. And you start with your home office, and then you, from your home office, you do what's called initial build. Initial build is you put in, okay, this, given your starting number of EAPs, economic points, that you actually then start with that, and you can purchase whatever ships you want to purchase, and you move forward from there. And then the idea is that you move around the system, your sector first, and then other sectors, and then you take control of other planets or hexes, because it's not always planets. It could be a planet, it could be a planetoid, it could be a comet, it could be an asteroid field. There are all these things that you can, take control of, and you can set up bases on these. They're called major sites, because major sites are defined by certain terrain. It's called point terrain. You got point terrain, you got area terrain. Area terrain is within all the hex, and you got point terrain, which is usually the site where you can put things. Now this is all done on a map. Now, obviously, because you're playing with other players, there's what's the big thing with this game is going to be diplomacy. Making deals with other players. Now, the problem with making deals with other players, you can also piss them off, and it gets really nasty when you start pissing them off. In some cases, it depends on how seriously people are taking the game.
And how.
I just had one person leave. because of they just got tired of with dealing with one of the people, which happens. Can't avoid that. But the thing is, okay, you got what part of the orders? You have your ship orders. Your ship orders are, of course, your movement, and then you have other special orders like prospecting. What happens in the case of prospecting is that you actually, when you visit one of those sites that I mentioned earlier, that when you actually go to those sites, you can then prospect and actually gather up the materials, because there's four kinds of materials that are available. There's people, there's dilithium crystals, there is ore, you know, like iron ore, that kind of thing. Ore, and there's one other one that I can't remember off the top of my head. That's really awful. But there are four different kinds of resources that each of the of these have. And what will happen is that if some of these actually produce those ores and so forth, and then you can gather them up at a later point in time. And if you own, in certain cases, if they actually produce it, you just, when you own it, then each turn you get that number of people, or that number of the lithium, or that number of ore, or the other one, which I forget what it is. And I'm sure the people who are playing Starfleet Warlord are screaming at me, though I'm not sure anyone who plays Starfleet Warlord actually listened to this podcast, to be honest. But anyway, and then one of the orders you can do is you can scan the territory for that. You can scan for terrain for that sector from a ship. You can scan for sites. You can do these number of scans from your ship if your ship's a scout. Now, and then there's also different orders, what's it called? Extra orders or starbase orders. Starbase orders are you use for like doing scans and things like that. And extra orders are things like purchasing a ship, fortifying a site. Because to build up a base, you fortify a site, and when you get to a certain level, it actually puts a base there. So that's relatively simplified in that case. Now, and that's not it. There's other orders that you can also, extra orders that you can have. The whole idea of Mini Warlord is this. Take most of those orders and throw them out the window. And make it into a simplified version of Warlord. So that, one, I can rewrite it from scratch, number one, because currently the engine is completely written in Clipper. Clipper, for any of you who have ever done D-based programming back in the day, and when I say back in the day, I mean back in the day, as in around 30 years ago.
Oh my lord, Clipper, I haven't heard that in forever.
Yeah. That's what this was written in. Oof. And the one thing that always drives me crazy with Clipper is one thing, because I'm a trained computer programmer. They did something in DBase or in Clipper, which is the offshoot of DBase, that drives me crazy to no end to this day. And that is, they have variables within the context of the language. Now, if you have a file open and selected, as in that's the file you're going against, if the variable doesn't match any local variables, first thing it'll do is it'll look to see if that variable is considered a column in that file. And if it's not a column in that file, then it's considered a local variable. So
it does seem like this is ripe for a rewrite.
Yeah, that part is And that's a lot of work to rewrite that, because as I said, the difficulty is that 1 degree, which is you do a select one. That's file number one. Okay, what's file number one? The file number one might be corporations. Actually, I think it's file number three in Starfleet Warlord. But select that file, and then you have to figure out, okay, what are the columns in that file? And converting that into another language is insane. Because of the way files are read, a totally different way of doing it. Now, obviously, one way of doing it would be, I mean, the code would look awful, but it would work in theory, which is, you know, write a programming language which kind of interprets the context of those variables. So the variables are actually this, you have basically, you're writing an interpreter in another language for Clipper, almost. But, you know, but you convert the Clipper program into that one which uses a library to emulate Clipper, you know, which it, as I said, it would be the ugliest little thing ever. And which is why I want to start from scratch. And also, if I can start from scratch, one thing I can do is I can completely automate the system. Because one of my goals, which is, oh Lord, it's been too long. Which is, what I want is the ability to have an automated system so that you can have a beginner come in, play the game basically online. You say, okay, here's my orders, boom. Results, you can either have them, you know, just shown in the browser, or you can actually have them emailed to you, just the order, just the results, because, you know, what I'm thinking about is all those freaking spammers out there in the whole entire world. This is crazy. You know how bad it is when it comes to spam? You know how bad it is?
Oh, God, yes.
They've gotten this in some cases, they've gotten so desperate to spam people, they start using contact forms on websites to spam people.
A lot of people are starting to think what they're doing now, if they're trying to build AI agents that can go through those forms, and they're trying to use those forms to train the AI agents to bypass CAPTCHAs and other human detection systems.
Well, you don't need any AI to do the CAPTCHAs. All you need to do is a Mechanical Turk. You know, pay somebody, just give them a couple of pennies to get past the CAPTCHAs. You know, it's...
Yep.
That's what they do. So, you know.
This is why we can't have nice things. If anything people do, somebody will be a jerk about it.
Oh, yeah. Agreed. Which is, that's the fine part, is I was listening. I'm to Leo Laporte talk about this, which is, the whole idea of how computer scientists back in the day were all like, oh, cool, you know, we're going to be able to share information with people so readily. And if there's any false information, you know, the good stuff, the stuff that's true will come to the top. No. You know, and then, of course, the one thing to help with the whole idea of transactionality, of actually being able to have kind of idea of it, because the web was never designed to be transactional, to be session oriented. Its idea was that, okay, you go, you search, you get a yes web page, it gives you back the web page. Okay, great. That was it. Then they added the feature called cookies. The idea was to have, you have like a session that so when you visit that website again, okay, you're in, or next web page on that site, you can say, oh, that's for that session, and therefore if you want to, you can actually like use it for purchasing things, and you didn't have to have everything on a single web page. You know?
Also allowed the scripts to be written such that the data that individual users needed were stored on the user's computer rather than otherwise.
Well, that's when Ajax, the whole idea of Ajax came into play, the whole idea of Web 2.0, where the basically the browser became the UI, which the funny part about that is that there are some pushback on that idea now because of the problem is that the browser is being bloated with so much code that is running in the browser that
it's no longer a web browser. It's an OS interpreter in its own right.
That's true.
Particularly with the way Microsoft has integrated Edge and Explorer before into the OS into levels that make it almost impossible to separate.
True. But more to the point is that it's slowing down the browsers because all this stuff is interpreted. Now, even the WebAssembly stuff, which is supposed to help in that regard to be more performant, which is kind of compiled code to a certain degree, compiled interpreted code. It's goofy. But, you know, you have so much running in the browser that it's slowing things down. So it's like, guys, I think we went a little too far. And especially the whole idea of some of these JavaScript frameworks, the whole idea of them is to help speed up development. The problem with that is now all of a sudden they become so freaking bloated because these frameworks have gotten so large that to make a very small application in the browser takes up so much space. And you have to download so much from the website that it's insane. Something that should only take maybe, 2K, 5K maybe? Is multi-megabytes of data to download to have it so it runs in the browser, which is freaking insane.
Not to mention the way everybody likes to ask for more data than they really need for purposes over and above what they actually say that it's for.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Which was... Who was it? I forgot. There was one state... had a website. Basically, it was if you looked at the data that was in the HTML, you're showing a lot of PII, like social security numbers. Even though it was quote unquote hidden, you couldn't see it displayed, but if you actually looked at the downloaded HTML, it had that PII actually in the web page. It was generated in the web page itself. Yay!
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's getting a little late, and Lord knows we got chasing a couple of rabbits, which really sucked into the time.
That's half the fun some nights.
Yeah, true. And Doug actually survived the whole podcast, and then didn't get dropped from the phone call. And of course, it's right. The one times I remember.
Achievement unlocked.
Nah. Still here.
Yeah. Hey. Doug, you're still here? Okay. Well, with that.
Still here.
Yep. Jeff, it's always been a pleasure.
Good evening.
You have a good night.
Good night.
Doug, always a pleasure. I will definitely stop by this weekend to drop off the stuff so that you can have it for Saturday morning. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay, have a good night.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
All right, have a good one.
So, talk about the hidey hole game, which I think would be really cool. I have to see what I'd have to do to the client to implement the hidey hole game. But I think that'd be really neat. Obviously, it's something that could be done with two boards and a moderator. relatively simple. As I said, you know, the rules are relatively simple. You can't fire through the hole. You can fire across the hole if you're on both the same map, and if someone's on your side and then goes through the hole, and you have a seeking weapon, the seeking weapon's lost tracking, and boom. So obviously, that's one of those things that you need to, if you're gonna fire a seeking weapon, that could be only basically to chase the guy to the other side of the map. So you don't want to do it too much, you know. You can use the hiding holes as your ultimate wild weasel, you know. So in my mind, that means you wouldn't want to use plasma unless you want to use bolting in some cases. Now, of course, then there's the mini warlord, which I think I'll bring up on the Starfleet Warlord group. I think that is a great idea, and the reason why I want to bring that up with the group is because of I want to ask them, okay, what is the minimum? I mean, let's pull this back to simplify this game. I know you guys enjoy all the wonderful orders, all the wonderful things you can do in the game and so forth. Let's pull it back a bit, shall we? And see if we can come up with a smaller version of the game that I can basically rewrite from scratch to a certain degree. There are certain things I still need to look into because of obviously one, if you've ever played Starfleet Warlord, one of the wonderful things about it are the responses, the text. You know, it will say crazy, you know, crazy things like, oh, the monster's found you this month, blah, 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 or not, you know, this turned, but, or, you know, you ran into this large fleet and you ran like hell, you know, thing, you know, really quippy stuff, which is great, definitely helps in the case of storytelling, which is, if you, it's part of the gaming experience is the story that is being told, the narrative of that game that you're playing, you know. Obviously, I would love to have someone to write up a story about their, you know, putting themselves in narrative as, okay, the great admiral or leader of this corporation, because that's what they're called. And this is what I, you know, I told him to do this. And Captain So-and-so, he completely failed and got blown out of the water, you know, or whatever. You know, the stories that you can roll in, which would be cool. Obviously, that'd be... That reminds me of something that'd be actually kind of cool, which is they currently, well, part of it is the actual legendary officers. That'd be something neat to add to Warlord, which is the ability to actually name the officers. You know, so that when you transfer them, you're transferring Officer Heckman or whatever from this ship to this ship, you know. So personalize things a little better because that's one of those things that's usually good for narratives. And better experience, at least that's what I've been told when I've been listening to Three Moves Ahead. So anyway, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.